hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari. Take it away, guys.
And now back with us here and making his seventh appearance on Thursday Night Tailgate is one of our all-time favorite guests, and that's former Pro Bowl quarterback Drew Bledsoe. Let me remind you about a few of Drew's accomplishments. Played his college ball at Washington State, where in his junior season, 1992, he led the Cougars to a 9-3 record and a win at the Copper Bowl over Utah. And in that game, he set the single-game passing record at Washington State with 476 yards. That year, he also set the single-season mark for completions with 241 and with passing yards with just under 4,000. He was named the Pac-10 Offensive Player of the Year. He was a first-round draft pick, the number one overall selection by the New England Patriots in 1993. He was a four-time Pro Bowler, and he played in the league from 1993 to 2006 with the Patriots, Bills, and Cowboys. And we've said this for years, that Drew belongs up in Canton because he had a Hall of Fame career. He currently ranks 16th all-time in passing yards, 13th in pass completions, and 11th in pass attempts, and he's 21st in touchdown passes. He was also sacked 467 times, which is sixth most all-time. In 2001, he was inducted into the Washington State Athletics Hall of Fame. 2011, inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. And in 2012, he was inducted into the State of Washington Sports Hall of Fame. So, hello, Canton. Are you listening? And we're very excited. He is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Drew, Chris, and Bob. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi, Drew.
Hey, always good to talk to you guys, man. No, I appreciate the pub. It was pretty funny. I caught just the end of Dennis's interview, and the interesting thing with, you know, statistically, when I retired, I think I was in the top 10 of all those categories, and you know, when he's talking about they need to take all the stats and throw them out and reset them, there is a piece of that that's really true. For, you know, shoot, man, it used to be that throwing for 4,000 yards in a season was a big deal. Now if you don't throw for 4,000 yards, man, you're getting shipped off to someplace else. But yeah, it was a heck of a run, man. I loved it, and thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. And let's start right there, Drew, because to your point, we've talked to several defensive backs and several of your quarterback peers, but, you know, the game is so different now. I mean, you know, defensive backs have a hard job. You can't touch a wide receiver. You can't hit them hard. You know, if they're not looking back for the ball, it's pass interference, and they got to watch for the double moves, and they got to watch for the back shoulder throws. And majority of the quarterbacks right now, because of all of these things, are completing, you know, 75% of their passes. That was unheard of back in the day. Talk through that. I mean, now that, you know, all these rules have changed and made it so much easier, you know, quarterbacks and the thresholds to your point, that's certainly not the way it was back when you played.
Well, let me start with this. I think the game is better from a fan standpoint. I mean, I love watching football, and let's be honest, man. You know, you turn on a football game, you don't want to watch a 9-6 game with a bunch of field goals. You know, you want to watch good quarterbacks. You want to watch scoring. You want to watch those big plays. And so, they have made the game better from a fan standpoint. But it certainly is a different game. There's no arguing that it's a very different game from what it was before. One of the interesting interviews that I heard an interview with Bruce Smith, who unfortunately, you know, played in my division. So I think I was the star of one of his Nike commercials my rookie year. When he had one of those hits that now would be one of those hits that now would have gotten him suspended for a month. But back then it was just football. But I heard an interview with Bruce, and they were asking him if he would have had more or less sacks if he played in this era. And Bruce said, and I think he was right, he said, well, I would have had more sacks because they're throwing the ball a lot more. He goes, but if you went back through the, I don't know, 200 and something, I don't know what the number is. It's a monumental amount of sacks. He goes, but if you went back through the sacks that I had during my career, probably half of them now would have been penalized as roughing the passer. Right. And, you know, so it's definitely very, very different. I do think it's better. It's better for the game. It's better for player safety. You're going to see guys playing for longer, you know, all of those things, but there's no arguing that's a very, very different game.
And Drew, I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to go and talk about your alma mater, Washington State. You look at the Cougars this season, 4-3, and I think expectations were pretty high when they won the first three games of the season, and then they lost three in a row before beating Colorado last week. But Your thoughts on what you're seeing from your Cougars?
You know, they're always going to score points. You know that. With Mike Leach, he's going to put up big numbers. The game that really kind of sent him into this the tailspin was the UCLA game. And for anybody that's listening that's not on the West Coast, there's no chance you watch this game because it was so late. I think it ended well after midnight Pacific time. But my Cougs, they were up 32 points in the middle of the third quarter against UCLA, and UCLA won that game, and I think that sort of spun them out. They're good. They've got a huge test this week. They're playing the Oregon Ducks. They're big underdogs playing at Oregon. And if they can find a way to somehow beat the Ducks, then I think there's a lot of things in front of them. But if they get four losses now, man, now they really got to step it up to just get bowl eligible. I really like their quarterback though. Anthony Gordon, really playing well. They've got a bunch of great receivers. They've got an excellent running back. So there are pieces in place to score points. It's just all about whether we can shut people down going forward. But they've certainly been exciting to watch, man. It was about 12 years where they were really, really not very good. That was not very fun. So seeing them relevant again has been really cool.
You mentioned Anthony Gordon. I was curious if you had an opportunity to talk with him and even just, to the game you point out about, UCLA. I mean, the kid had 570 yards and 9 touchdowns. I mean, the score of that game was 67-63, and it wasn't in any overtimes. It was all a four-quarter game. That kid certainly lit it up. Your thoughts on him and if he had an opportunity to talk to him?
Yeah, I know. So my son's playing up there. My son's a quarterback on the team also. He's taking a medical redshirt this year, hopefully be in the mix next year. So my son's in the room with him all the time. He loves Gordo. Absolutely loves him. And the kid's got big arm talent. He can really throw it. Bided his time, a fifth-year senior, JC kid that came in, and now he's finally getting a chance to show what he's got. And I think he's a guy that can play on Sundays. I really do. I think Gordo's got the arm talent to go, play in the NFL. So, hopefully finishes out the season strong, picks up a couple W's and continues to light it up. But yeah, how about, I mean, the UCLA game. So here's an amazing statistic that I had not heard from one of my friends. Since Chip Kelly took over as the head coach at UCLA, in games that they've been behind by 30 points, they're 2-4. Okay. So 6 games they've been behind by 30 points or more. They're 2-4 in those games. In that same amount of time, the rest of NC2A Division I football is 0-440. So
wow.
All of the NC2A in that period of time is 2-444, and the 2 wins are both the UCLA Bruins. Isn't that amazing? I mean, behind by 30, nobody wins them behind by 30, and somehow Chip's teams have managed to do it twice. Unfortunately, one of them was against my Cougs, which was an absolute heartbreaker.
Well, that's sort of the good news and the bad news, right, for a UCLA fan, is the ability for them to stay focused and to come back and win, fantastic. The fact that you've been down by more than 30 points 6 times, that's pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's not very fun. Being behind by 30 is usually not good. Even if you're an NBA team in the fourth quarter, behind by 30 still sucks. But you can still come back from that. If you're playing football and you're down by 30, the prognosis is pretty dire at that point.
5 questions for Drew.
Hey, Drew, welcome back. It's always an honor to speak with you. And I had mentioned early in the show how you threw for over 600 passes 3 years in a row, and you did it 4 times in your career, over 600 attempts. And that led the league in 94, 95, 96. Was that by design, Drew? Was it a Ray Perkins thing? And tell us your input into the play calling. Just talk about that offense in general.
Yeah, so when I came in, so it was Bill Parcells, the head coach, Ray Perkins, the offensive coordinator, and that was certainly not the MO of either one of those guys, was to come out and throw the ball all over the field. But it's simply what we were best at, and that's what gave us the best chance to win. So we came out and chucked it around a bunch. Now, you look at it statistically, if you throw it a ton of times, it's usually not a good recipe. At least in that era, it was not a good recipe. That means usually means you're behind, coming from behind. So, you know, we weren't playing great defense and had to score a lot of points, so we had to come out and throw it a whole bunch. But I sure enjoyed it, man. We give me the ball, let me chuck it. That's what made me happy. I would have had a lot of fun playing in this era right now, whether you're talking college or pros, where you come out and just sling it all over the yard. Also would have been pretty nice to play in an era where they can't hit the quarterbacks. Jeez, man, that would have been awesome. Back then it was sort of a badge of honor, honestly, as a quarterback to get hit really hard and then get up and keep playing. Cause, you know, you don't really get to, as a quarterback, you know, you don't get to show that you're, you know, a tough guy. You don't ever get to go hit somebody, and you're certainly not going to get a fight with anybody because, you know, they're all way better athletes than we are as quarterbacks, or at least better than I was. But it was always sort of a badge of honor to, you know, have Bruce Smith, you know, drill you between the shoulder blades, and then you get up and answer the bell and come back and do it again. But it certainly didn't feel very good, man. It'd be a lot more fun to play like they're playing right now, where, you know, you give a quarterback a dirty look and that draws a yellow flag. But it was fun, man. I'll tell you what, man, my career certainly, you know, it was fun. Loved it. Certainly could have been better. There are always those ones that you look back on that you wish you could have had. But I will tell you this, man, I enjoyed every minute of it, man. It was so friggin' cool. Getting to realize a childhood dream, play NFL football, be an NFL, you know, starting quarterback for 14 years. I loved every second of it, and wouldn't swap my era for this era. Cause I just think it was just kind of cool to play in that era where they could really try to hurt you and you could get up and keep going. But man, it was just an awesome experience.
And Jewel, just a little more about Parcells. We've always had the attitude, and just by the way he was, that he is a defensive guy and, probably didn't get involved in the offense much unless you weren't doing well and then you heard about it. And the guy that was tough on everybody, is all this pretty much accurate? How much of a input did he have into the offense on those teams?
You know, so I was with Parcells twice. I was with him in New England. I was with him again in Dallas, which just shows right. That I'm not very smart. I went back and played for him again. It was interesting, you know, when Bill would get involved in the play calling, I could always tell because things started to happen more slowly, you know, where instead of just like the coordinator sending the play down and then it coming in, all of a sudden, I'm waiting for a play to come in. And that's when I knew that Bill was chiming in and changing what was going on with the coordinators that we had. And usually when he got involved, that turned into, ISO and lead dive and just run the ball, you know, when he got involved. So, particularly with, we got to be with, Sean Payton as my offensive coordinator my first year in Dallas. Sean and I really had a good rapport, and I just, you know, I knew with Sean, I knew what play was coming, knew what was going on. Plays came in really fast, and then every once in a while, Bill would start to chime in, and that's when things slowed down. And all of a sudden, we're just handing it off and running off tackle. So I liked it when he stayed out of it. How about that?
That's good.
Drew, one more before we let you go. And obviously, the Patriots are off to another dominating start. And we know how good Tom Brady is and all of that. But people talk about the system. And it's, Belichick's system. And I was curious to get your thoughts. Is how much does a system play into? Because you look at, it doesn't matter who the players are, you turn over year after year, and they're right back, you know, at the top of the AFC and playing for a Super Bowl. What is it about that system, or is that just a myth?
Oh, no. But when you say system, I think people need to understand, if you're going to look at it and say system, it's not a scheme system. It's not a play calling system. It's an organizational system from the very top to the very bottom. Starts with Robert Kraft as the owner, who's brilliant and has helped create the culture of excellence there. Then you have Belichick, who with his staff, they do a better job in every area of coaching. You got you've obviously got an amazing quarterback that he was a really crappy backup quarterback. He didn't understand the backup part. I got hurt, and then he was supposed to go back to the sidelines. He didn't get that part. But he's been a pretty good starting quarterback. He's just a bad backup quarterback. But if you want to know why the Patriots continue to have this amazing level of success, they strive to be better than everybody else at every single aspect of what they do. Whether you're talking about salary cap management, whether you're talking about nutrition, whether you're talking about travel, whether you're talking about how they actually coach their players, during camps and on the field, they just, every single aspect of what they do, they are trying to be better than anybody else at that aspect of it. And if they're not, then they will find a way to get better at that aspect of it. I will tell you this though, this thing that's happening with the Patriots this year, their defense is the best I've seen, and that's a big statement. I've seen a lot of defenses. I've seen a lot, the kind of the gold standard when I was playing would have been the Buccaneers with Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, and John Lynch, and all of those guys. I have not seen a defense. The 85 Bears would be the only one that I could bring up that would be in the conversation with these guys. I watch it as a quarterback, and I felt so bad for Sam Darnold I think it was Sunday night, and he got raked over the coals for not looking very good against that defense. But I'm watching it from a quarterback perspective. There's no time to throw, and there's nobody open. And when you're a quarterback and you've got no time to throw and nobody open, that is an absolute nightmare. And the only super established quarterback they've played against so far this year was Ben Roethlisberger in the opener. I was at that game, and so I was sitting up above, and I'm watching what Ben's looking at, and I'm like, man, there's no place to go with the ball. They play great coverage in the secondary. They've got great man coverage. Scheme-wise, they've got a bunch of dudes who you've never heard of that are getting after the passer, shutting down the running game. It's amazing what they're doing defensively this year. I just don't know how somebody beats them, but I'm being completely honest. I don't know how you beat that team this year unless you have some special team scores, some weird turnovers. I'm just not sure how anybody beats that team this year. It's really pretty remarkable. I heard my buddy pointed out today that if the Patriots offense had scored 0 points this year, so think about this. If the Patriots offense had scored 0 points through 7 games, they would be 3-3-1. Their defense that's a true statistic. If their offense had come out and just taken a knee every snap, their defense would be 3-3-1. They've outscored three of the teams, and they've tied one of the teams. Because it was a zero, right? So their defense, if their offense never took the field, would be 3-3-1 this year.
Wow. And still winning the AFC East.
I'm actually going to be in.
The Bills are 5-1.
I'm going to go watch the Bills, man. They're playing great defense, man. I haven't been back to Buffalo since 2004. Can't wait to go back, man. Buffalo is one of those places that everybody thinks is awful, and it's the opposite of that, man. It was an awesome place to play as a player. It's a very blue collar area. The fans are fantastic. I might have to see if I can find a folding table to jump on, but I need a paramedic there if I'm going to do that. The Bills are legit this year. I think they're playing great defense.
And I've got my Drew Bledsoe Buffalo Bills jersey on as we speak, so kudos to you. Before we let you go, remind our listeners about Double Back Winery and how they can stay up to date with all the great things you're doing in the wine business, and then you over social media as well.
Yeah, right on, man. Thank you. We've got two wineries. We've got Double Back Winery, which is our high-end estate-grown Cabernet. consistently, you know, ranked with the best wines in the world, which I can brag about it because I don't actually make the wine. I've got a rock star staff that does that for me. And then our second winery is Bledsoe Family Winery. That's where we get to be a little more adventurous. We make some Cabernet, some Syrah, a little Rosé, a little Chardonnay. You know, we get to be a little more adventurous on the Bledsoe Family Winery side. If somebody wants to find it, if you just search Drew Bledsoe Wine, it'll pop up. But dude, I've stood by this and so far nobody has called me on it. You order wine from us, it's a money back guarantee from me. If you don't like the wine, let me know. I'll send you your money back. So far nobody's called me on it. So I think our guys are doing a pretty good job. Social media, it's just at Drew Bledsoe. But hey guys, man, I can't tell you how much I enjoy being on with you. Really appreciate you. I don't know how many times do I get to be on, have to be on before I get on the leaderboard, like all time guests. I mean, I'm moving up in the rankings. That's good, man. Well, keep reaching out. Yeah, always happy to jump on and talk with you guys.
We appreciate it very much, Drew. Got to get you to double figures. This was 7, so we got a few more to go. Once we get to double digits, you'll be right there. But we can't thank you enough for your continued support. You're fantastic.
Yeah, thanks, Drew.
All right. Thank you guys so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
See you, Drew. That's the great Drew Bledsoe. And Bob, we've talked about this many times, and we're fortunate to have a lot of really great players to come on this show. And Drew is certainly right at the top of that list. You know, Richmond Webb, who's going to be joining us in a few weeks. Again, another guy right up there. But so many guys that the Pro Football Hall of Fame needs to take another look at. If you are in the top, 10, 15 in the category, like I say, I go back, 16th in passing yards, 13th in pass completions, 11th in pass attempts, and 21st in touchdown passes. So at worst, there were, 21 guys or 20 guys better than you in the history of the sport at quarterback, and you're not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Really? Boy, they're going to take another look at that number.
Yeah, that's a great point, Chris. I mean, this is a guy, if you look at the passing numbers, they're pretty gaudy. I mean, the amount of, over 6,700 pros in his career. And when you have seasons where you're well over 350 completions, I mean, that's some, it was a different era. You got to consider the era when these guys play when you're considering Hall of Famers. And I think his size worked for him, Chris, because as you mentioned, he got sacked an awful lot. But at 6'5", almost 240 pounds, he was one of those first real big men that played quarterback. But as you can tell, a very cerebral guy. He loves this show. We love having him on. But just love to talk with a guy that's just so well-educated and well-rounded. We'll get him on 10 times easy, Chris.
I hope so. All right, when Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our spotlight on the positive. Two more great stories about guys out there doing great things in their communities. We'll do that on the other side of this real quick station break.